Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, March 16th, 2016. And with me today, I have Kelly Gaumont. And how are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I am good. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Good morning.
I'm happy both of you are here. I'm happy all of us survived the Ides of March.
And my day.
Yeah, I mean, that can really, it's like backstabbing bad. And anyhow.
it's been a pretty turbulent week, I guess.
Boy, howdy. Okay.
And it's only Wednesday.
Yeah. So I have a couple topics and I want to make sure we hit today. So we're just going to jump right in. And the first thing that I want to talk about comes out of an editorial that you wrote yesterday, John, where you talk about whether or not the federal government has the authority to grant itself absolute power in the Apple case where, well, actually the San Bernardino shooters case, where they want Apple to write code that would let them bypass security measures on an iPhone. And by extension, does the government have the authority to grant themselves absolute power in other cases? And I thought we should dive into that.
Yeah, I was thinking about this because as we've watched the legal case unfold, each side is trying to cite legal precedent and the Constitution and interpretation of the Constitution and current law like CALEA and so on and so on. And it's a pitched battle, and each side believes that it is right. Now, I believe Apple's got the right on its side here because there is a new thing we have now. It's this thing that we didn't have before, and that is this tremendous amount of information that's available in our phones, health data, financial data, personal data, even company secrets, personal emails, private conversations, and so on, so on. And the subject has come up whether the citizen has an absolute right to protect this information or whether it's relative. And is it protected under the Constitution? And each side is arguing about this, and the government is posing that they have a compelling right to access information when they believe there's a crime committed. And the other side of the coin is that if you create these tools to access this particular phone, these tools will be at risk. Other countries will want to have access in a similar fashion. The whole Pandora's box will be opened and everyone's security will be. The question, the technical plus legal question is there any way to resolve this without preserving an absolute right on the part of the customer to keep this information private, even in the face of trying to fight terrorism? Does the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few?
And I see where you went there.
It's possible to make the case that we should have an absolute right to control that information, and how much of that right we decide to give up should be the will of the people through constitutional means. And so I looked at a little bit of the history of the development of the Constitution and history in England, where the founding fathers were rebelling against the monarchy in England, which wrapped itself in the cloak of absolute authority based on God. God appointed kings and queens. Kings and queens acted with the absolute authority of God, and there was no questioning them. And so when the founding fathers formed this country's constitution, they got away from that because they didn't like the idea of absolute authority. There were so many abuses of that, and they had quite enough of it. And so our constitution delineates the powers that the federal government shall have, limits them, and sets up a structure with the three branches so that no one branch can have absolute power. And so the real question here is, in my mind, is not whether the government is right or whether Apple is right. The question is, how much power are the people willing to grant under the constitutional structure to the government? And that issue is up to the people to decide over and above the legal wrangling that's currently going on. And is one reason why I think that Apple wants this resolved in Congress, not in the courts, because it's necessary for the people to express their will about this absolute privacy of their phone, even in the face of fighting terrorism and crime. And once the people express their will and say, no, under no circumstances can you enter my phone without my permission, then that has to be expressed in law, which can then be, you know, upheld by the courts. So that was basically a thumbnail sketch of the article. Now, I thought it was kind of cool.
Now, do you think that there are enough people in our country that have a firm enough grasp on what's involved with creating encryption and protecting information that they would be able to in an intelligent way, decide whether or not they want the government to have the ability to sidestep our encryption?
That's a really tough question. The only way I can answer that right now off the cuff is to say that the high-profile case between Apple and the FBI, the arguments on both sides, and all the popular articles that have been talking about this are raising the awareness. And that very process of raising that awareness, hopefully, will lead people to ponder what's at stake. That's my only hope, Obi-Wan.
I hope so, too. My fear is that this is just complex enough that it's beyond the grasp of the average voter. And not that they're not capable of understanding, but this isn't something that they've ever had to learn and really digest before. And I fear that people would choose to give up their privacy and their technological security because they're responding emotionally and they really don't understand what's at stake.
Well, you know, here at the Mac Observer, we've been trying very hard to educate the readers. You and me and Brian have written several articles that lay the situation out. So, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to do to help educate the readers and the listeners. I don't know how pervasive it will be.
Hopefully pervasive enough. Now, my feeling is that that our government, regardless of what some people that are in office or are working for various government agencies think, our government can't have absolute power over anything. And I think that's one of the core ideas in our Constitution, because the Constitution by its nature is designed to be a document that restricts the government.
So, right. The FBI is acting in a manner, apparently, in contradiction to the will of the Department of Defense and Department of Homeland Security. They're sort of off the track, according to Richard Clark, which we wrote about the other day. Brian posted an article on that. So this is sort of a session where the FBI has sort of taken the lead on something which other government agencies are a little skeptical about, because they understand that the encryption of our communications and our phones is paramount for our economy and for national security and government security as well. So this is sort of a test case. And what bothers me is that I've seen government officials talk about how there has to be a compromise. President Obama said that. This is a unique case because perhaps there can be no compromise. A compromise would create grave technical risks of privacy for the future and loss of rights that can never be recovered, or open the door to, you know, foreign governments spying on Americans. Or,
well, we've already seen that. Guys.
So, yeah, we see it every day. I mean, when as authors, we look around and we see the dangers of the internet, and every guy is trying to hack into our phones.
Whenever all of this started and we talked exclusively about the Apple FBI situation on the show, one of the things that I said at the time, and we record it, so I know you can go back and check, was if the U.S. government can do this, think about every other government in the world, and do you want all of them to have that kind of access? And I said, I think specifically my example was China. How happy are people going to be that the FBI did this if now the Chinese government wants into somebody's phone for one reason or another, an American's phone? And the Chinese government is now asking the FBI for help. They're sort of saying, well, you're the government. You're totally going to win this, because that's a very Chinese mindset. And it sounds like they, too, have a list of phones they'd like to get into once the FBI takes care of this little matter. And
sort of an absolute right.
Exactly. I mean, and so it's happening. Like, they've come out publicly. The Chinese government has come out and said that it wants the FBI's help in getting into these phones. And so I really hope, like, on the one hand, I really like to be right. But on the other hand, that's a thing I really did not want to be right about. And I totally am. And it kind of sucks. And I hope that maybe people will think long and hard about this before making some sort of snap judgment or,
we have a long history of absolute rights on the part of the citizens. For example, you could argue that you have an absolute right to be free from assault. You have an absolute right to be free from being shot in Walmart while you're shopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't expect a government legislator to say, well, you know, we compromise on everything. There are some conditions where, you know, you ought to be, you know, level-headed about this and agree that, you know, under certain circumstances, it's okay for you to be assaulted. It's okay for you to be shot. It's okay for your wife to be attacked in the parking lot. We don't subscribe to those kinds of compromises.
See, I would have said that before years started with two. I would have said that before this century, because after, say, the back half of 2001, all bets are off. And that's the reason that this worries me, is because they're hitting the terrorism angle on this so hard in order to scare people into doing something that people probably shouldn't want to do. And they're using fear to do that instead of just information. So to use your example, if I were to go up to the Walmart, as my aunt says, if I go up to the Walmart and I'm shopping, I think I have a reasonable expectation that I will not get shot. Now let's suppose I do. So the facts in the case are, I was at Walmart and I came out with, you know, a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread and a bullet. And kind of didn't mean to come out with a bullet, just sort of how it went. Now, the facts of the case are, somebody shot me while I was up at the Walmart, and that's a problem. And nobody's trying to use, there's no fear in any of that. I'm relating this very dispassionately, considering the fact that it was me that got shot in my example. But for the most part.
Yes, but luckily, it's just an example. You didn't really get shot.
No, I did not. Just for the record, I did not get shot up at the Walmart. But the thing is, like, it, you know, in the Apple FBI case, nobody's really, like, Apple's trying to stick to the facts in the stuff that they've been saying. But the FBI is like, terrorism, booga, 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 and trying to scare people into doing what they want people to do. And I feel like if they were sticking to the facts, too, if they really think that they're in the right on this, they wouldn't have to do any of that. And yet, that's all we seem to be hearing out of them. And by the way, I know that court filings and court documents are super boring and really dry and usually are just like...
Uh-oh, we may have just lost Kelly, which is probably the NSA just being upset about what she's saying.
Could be.
All right. Well, I'm going to take that as a sign. And the sign is that we need to jump on to the next topic that I want to hit. And that is... Oh, Kelly's trying to come back and join us.
I really was.
Okay, well, welcome back. You're back just in time for the next topic. And that's two-factor authentication. And the reason I want to talk about two-factor authentication is because there's a lot of people that I think are kind of afraid of it because they don't understand what it is. And there's a lot of people that don't get just how valuable this can be for them. The reason I want to talk about this today is because we have a case that's come back into the spotlight that's been kind of on the back burner for a year or so. And this is the case where someone hacked into the iCloud and Gmail accounts for a long list of celebrities and then was able to find a bunch of nude photos of these celebrities, which then later found their way onto the internet. And that ended up getting the nickname The Fappening, and it was this big thing, and it raised a lot of security questions and had people questioning just how secure iCloud is, because the assumption was that there were security weaknesses in iCloud that this hacker was able to exploit. Well, it turns out he's been caught, and he was arrested, and he's pleading guilty. And he says what he did was create email phishing scams that tricked these celebrities into handing over their usernames and passwords. So there was no inherent weakness in Gmail or in iCloud that he exploited. Instead, he exploited people. Exactly. So he took advantage of their gullibility in this case. And and got their usernames and passwords. Now, what would have stopped him dead in his tracks is if these people had been using two-factor authentication. So,
and why is that, Jeff?
Well, that's because, Kelly, when you use two-factor authentication, instead of simply needing your username and password, you need an additional element that is the unknown part in this equation. So you need to have this second part, this second factor, to be able to log into an account. So in the case of iCloud, as an example, this would be your whole Apple ID setup. You enter your username and password, and when you have two-factor or two-step authentication enabled, then you have a known trusted device that gets a code. So that's now your unknown element in logging in. You don't even know it until you get it. And so then you get like a 4-6-digit code, and then you have to enter that in as well. And when you do that, you now have access to your account. Now, in this case, the hacker would not have been able to get into anyone's account because he did not have access to the devices that were going to get those second factor elements, meaning the code that someone had to type in. He would have been locked out.
Now we're talking about physical access, because what happens, I have two-factor authentication on everything. So I get a new device, or I'm using a different browser or whatever, and I go to log into Gmail. And when I go to log into Gmail, it says, hey, like I enter my email address and then I enter my password. And once I enter my password, it says, hold up, you have two-factor authentication on. Check for a code that we have sent you. And you can set up how the code is sent to you and where it goes and all that kind of stuff. I get a text message. So I have to have the factor of a password, and I also have to have the factor of something I have. So there's sort of, I don't know my Gmail password because it's one password, but the old rule of thumb was something you know and something you have. So we'll pretend for the moment that I know my Gmail password, even though I don't. And because one password told me what it should be, and so I just use that. So I fill in my password
and then Kelly fades out.
Additional step of this other thing. Oh no.
That's all right. I know where you were going. You entered your password, and then you waited for the extra code to appear on your iPhone, and so that became the second factor. And once you had that, you could type that in, and you had access to your Gmail account.
Yes, if you can hear me.
Yep, totally can hear you now.
And the nice thing about it is that particularly if you're using...
There's some wonderful humor in this, because what I'm assuming is that every point where Kelly cuts out, it's the NSA saying or blocking her because they don't want you to know what she's saying. And
how about now?
Yep, you're back. So wrap up for me quick, Kelly, because okay. First you'll disappear really and fast. We need to end the show.
So the nice thing about doing it on an iOS device is that the little banner comes down from the top with the message in it, and you can see the code right there to enter it into the screen. And you don't have to do anything else. It's really easy. I promise you, it's super not complicated. There's a utility called Authy that will help you do this for other services like Facebook, where it's also a really good idea that other people can't get your password.
That was an excellent wrap up. Okay, so listeners, if you're not using two-factor authentication for your various accounts where that's an option, please think about enabling it and then take the next step and actually use two-factor authentication. So I'll make sure that in today's show notes, we have links to Apple's online documents about enabling two-factor authentication and Google's document about entering two-factor authentication. I will also make sure that we have a link to Authy, which is the iOS app that Kelly was talking about. Please. Get two-factor authentication going. It will help save you from the embarrassment and frustration and anger that a lot of celebrities had to go through when their personal photos were stolen. And I pass no judgment. You can take any kind of photo of yourself that you want, and I fully endorse that. But that doesn't mean the rest of the internet has to see what your photos look like. So let's keep those safe.
And never click on a link in an email you receive from somebody you don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
It should be up to you. Take whatever pictures you want, and what happens to them should be completely in your control and nobody else's, just like all the rest of your information. And the nice thing about doing this is this doesn't have to happen every time you log into your mail or every time you log into Facebook. This is usually like the first time you use a browser, or the first time you do something on a new phone, or the first time, you know, after you've gotten a new computer or something. Like, you don't have to do this every time you want to check your mail. I think a lot of people think there's a whole lot of gyration that goes into this, and it's a lot less than you probably think.
Yep, there you go. All right, on that note, we are out of time, so we're wrapping up. Kelly, thank you so much for being here and being so persistent, even as your connection was conking out.
Well, I have something to say. I'm really not going to let a thing like the internet keep me from saying it.
Clearly, and I'm okay with that. John, thank you so much for being here today.
That was my encrypted way of saying
it. Oh, this is why I love you, John. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.